Good morning, Igor Steshu. Thanks for coming.
Good morning.
Yeah, contributing to the history of the Balkly Valley for the museum's archives. And it's March the 8th, 2021. So, Igor, maybe if you're willing, we could start at the beginning and talk about where you came and why you came and the rest.
Well, at the very beginning, I guess I should go back to my childhood. And we had to really get out of our country, which was Ukraine, because of the Russian persecution. So we decided to immigrate and escaped this problem.
Okay. And where did you come to when you came to Canada?
Well, the thing is this, that we traveled west from Ukraine through part of what is now the Slovak Republic and Austria. And we were there from the last maybe 6 months or so of the Second World War, or maybe a little longer. And we were put in a refugee camp. And it was for 3 years. In 1948, we had the opportunity to immigrate. And it was just by luck that we actually came to Canada because a family adopted us here that knew our family still in Ukraine.
Very nice. So was that, where did you land? Was that in
Went by ship
okay.
to Halifax and from mm-hmm. Halifax to Dauphin, Manitoba. And that's where we were. That was our first place in Canada.
Right. How old were you?
10 and a half.
Okay. So you did spend a bit of your youth over in Europe then.
Oh, yes, yeah. I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what led you this far west?
Well, it's a long story. We went to, like I said, we first lived for a few months in Dauphin, and then we moved to Winnipeg. And then my father saw in the paper an advertisement for at that time was considered a high-paid job, $1.25 an hour, in Vancouver. So we moved to Vancouver. However, the company went broke, and we moved to Lulu Island. So we were there only about part of 1 year, and the climate, of course, was very wet, and my mother had some lung trouble, and it was considered that she'd be better off in a drier climate. So we moved to St. Catharines, Ontario. And that's where I finished my high school. And then I went to university at McMaster University in Hamilton. I graduated with a science degree. And then I went to medical school in Toronto. And I always wanted to get out of the big cities and really into beautiful, you know, beautiful scenery like the mountains. And I was always interested in hunting and fishing, and it seemed that British Columbia was a logical choice. Oh. So that's how come I'm here.
Okay. So, and then, from Lulu Island, which is down near the border, mm-hmm. you came up to Smithers.
No. You see, we went from Lulu Island.
Oh, to think.
We went back east.
That's right.
And then after I graduated in Toronto, I interned in Saskatoon.
Okay.
In Saskatchewan. And then I moved here.
Yeah.
With my wife and Julie, her daughter.
And how did you discover the valley?
Well, it was on a deer hunt in Saskatchewan. A man called Dr. Jack Matvenko told me that he practiced in British Columbia in Burns Lake, and this was the country where I wanted to go. And he showed me pictures of the mountains and so forth, and I was convinced.
Yeah.
So I came here.
Yeah, cool. So then had you applied at the, do you set up a practice here?
Well, I was working at first for a whole year for Dr. Moore, Dr. Dennis Moore, and then I set up my own practice.
And then, and what year was that? Do you remember?
Yeah, that was I came here in 1967.
And then?
Oh, and of course, in a year's time, I had my own, more or less, I was very short time and a very short partnership with Dr. Moore, and then I decided it was best to be alone. So the year after that, I set up my own practice.
Yeah. And was it just your own? And then did you take any partners with you after that?
Well, we worked on a sort of cooperative on-call basis. There was myself, Dr. Moore, and Dr. Doreen Ryan, and we shared call. So we were on call every third night.
So and is that on call at the hospital?
Yeah, well, that's right, for emergency.
Emergency, okay. Mm-hmm. And then, so if the whole time that you've been here in the Valley as Dr. Igor Stishu, were you affiliated with the hospital then?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And then when did you retire?
About 6.5 years ago or so.
Okay. And am I understanding correctly that for a while you were the oldest doctor in Northern BC?
Just before I retired, I was the oldest doctor here in Smithers.
Right. Yeah. And so with the experience at the hospital, is there any remarks that you have about special times delivering babies or?
Oh, yes, but they're long stories. I'm not sure that they would fit into this interview.
Okay. Then you said that you were interested in guide outfitting also.
Well, what happened was I was always interested in really the wilderness. And I thought if I could work in medical practice with being not only, for a few weeks out hunting and fishing and climbing mountains, if I could just arrange my life so I could extend that, Then I would really like it much more. So, than just being in the office most of the time and in the hospital and on call and just doctoring. So I thought one way of doing it is to get a, what we call a locum, a replacement for a certain time to take care of my practice when I was away. And then I could do something else. And that something else was big game guiding. Okay. So I bought a guiding area and I developed it, in camps and so forth. And that's the way my life went. So I was literally off. Eventually I was off. Like at first it started very small, the guiding, but eventually I was off for 3.5 months in the fall, and for general hunt, for mixed species hunt, and 1 month off in the spring for grizzly and black bear hunt.
Oh, yeah, and what area?
Well, it was a very large area. It's something like, if I'm not mistaken, 11,000 square miles. Wow. And that was essentially from Kitwanga Lake up to almost touching the Spetsizi area, north, just a bit north of Duty River. The boundary was a little creek called Kluitantan Creek. And it was wilderness, pure wilderness.
So did you hire assistant?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So how many people would you have guests?
Well, like I said, at first it started very small, but later on, not that it was huge, but I had four camps going at the same time, and in each camp I had two guides, two clients, like a guide each, and a cook. So. So it would be 3 times 4, 12 people.
So then you had the four camps, you said?
And essentially, yeah.
And how did you get back and forth to the four camps?
Well, they were strictly fly-in camps. And I became a pilot, a bush pilot, and I did my own flying.
Yeah. And when did you get your pilot's license?
I think it was 1977. But before that time, I tried to, you know, harvest the area the best I could with taking people out with horses. So I had some horses, pack train, and that's the way we got in. But I realized, you know, I couldn't cover hardly, you know, maybe 5% of the area without large expenditures on trail building and so forth. So I decided to just have fly-in camps.
Right. When you did the first trails, like when you first were horsepacking, which city or where did you start out from?
Well, actually, you know, I had a small ranch, you might say, in Driftwood. And that's where I kept the horses and eventually lived there, because at first we lived in town. And so I would track the horses essentially to a place called Duckwing Lake. And from there, I went into, at first I started just going into what is called Goat Mountain. And those are essentially mountain goat hunts and moose. Okay. And that's the way I started. But I very quickly changed to fly-in.
Yeah. And what kind of airplane did you have?
Oh, I had six of them.
Okay.
One after the other. Not at the same time, of course.
Yeah.
The first, I started with a Mall M4 rocket, it was called, and then a 185. And then I changed airplanes because certain terrain required a little different aircraft. And I had some very, very short legs that a lot of the pilots didn't dare land in them and take off. So I had to have the proper, you know, performance aircraft. My second aircraft was a 185 Cessna. Third one was a highly modified PA-12. Fourth one, I went back to a Cessna 185, but very converted with the Robertson stall kit. And then I had a Helio, a Super Helio, which is a very, very, how would you put it, very, very good stall aircraft, a large aircraft. And after that, I had the Husky.
Okay.
Which is really a modern-day Super Cub. And that's it.
Yeah. So when did you quit flying?
Well, after I actually sold my guiding area in 1988, I still kept on flying, but it was so expensive. I couldn't justify it just on a personal basis because it wasn't tax deductible now.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't use it for business. So it became a very, very expensive hobby. So that's what, I sort of substituted, I still kept horses and I packed out in the bush for myself after that, my own hunts. And I began also team roping, which was great.
Yeah, so where do you do the team roping, or did you up until recent times?
What happened was that in Houston, the Bell brothers, Hugh and Harry Bell, they set up a roping sort of arena at Hugh's place, and we had roping every Tuesday. They organized it. And then so occasionally for competition, I went to Vanderhoof or Quinnell.
Okay. And then, how many horses did you have for your hobby of horse?
Well, at one time I had 17 horses, but that was when I had a pack train and went in to hunt with clients. After that, I had four horses, two pack horses and two riding horses. One riding horse strictly and one roping horse. And then at the end, I just degenerated to two horses, one just a spare and one team roping.
Right. Yeah. So, and then you have Two children.
I have a boy and a girl.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything about the kids, how they're doing?
Well, yeah.
Being raised in
Stephen has done quite well. He teaches nuclear physics at University of Alberta and does cancer research at the Cross Institute in Edmonton. And Julie is a biologist and works for the game branch in Williams Lake. And they're good kids. We never had any problems with them.
Yeah, yeah. They truly are Driftwood kids, say?
Yeah. You know, I have really, where I live in Driftwood and out of town is a beautiful spot, and it's really a pleasure just being there.
Yeah.
The valley, this is the real home for me.
Yeah.
And that's really all I can say.
Yeah. Okay. So so how about with the guide out sitting, Igor, did you have any like memorable moments?
Oh, yes. I had a very memorable moment on one of the hunts. And this was a place called a little tiny lake called Dumshilgwood Lake. I was watching with a hunter that I had, a client. I was watching for moose. He wanted a moose and calling moose. But what happened was that a grizzly bear came. And he wanted pictures of this bear, as he didn't have a actually grizzly bear license, so he wasn't going to shoot it, but he wanted pictures. So we were taking pictures, and when the bear got to about 25-30 yards, I felt it was close enough, so I sort of said, "Okay, boy, go ahead, come on, get out of here," to the bear.
Like, yeah.
And instead of the usual reaction, which would be the bear would be a little bit surprised maybe, and would just just run away, what happened, he stood up, and I right away saw that this was an aggressive animal. He barked a few times, just like a dog, and then I really yelled at him. And he went and charged full blast, just full run.
Yeah.
Well, it took the hunter behind me just froze, you know. Yeah. And what happened was that I had an 8x57 military junker, really for a backup rifle, with me. But I shot at it three times. It was by this time, after the third shot, I mean, it was coming really fast. It was just big jumps towards me. And it was really probably, I don't know, at the most 10 yards away, at the most, maybe 5. And it turned to the right. And then I had a clear shot broadside. And I shot it broadside. And the bear actually, you know, died shortly after.
Yeah.
Now, that was a close one.
That's really close, yeah.
And another thing was that the hunter behind me was absolutely petrified. And after the bear was down, he said, "Gee, Igor, I'm sorry, I could have killed you." And I wonder what he meant by that. And what he did is, he was so nervous, he was right behind me, almost touching me, and he had the rifle between him and me, and he shot. He shot out of nerves, pressed the trigger, and it went right, between him and me, which went past my head maybe, I don't know, a foot, 8 inches.
Yeah.
But I was concentrating so hard on killing the grizzly, you know, I didn't even hear and notice it.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay, the mic is back on again, mm-hmm. and we are going to continue on with guide outfitting.
Yeah, there was a few other incidences, but one that sticks out in my mind was when a hunter, his name was Brian Dam, a very, very good hunter, and, you know, muscular, in good shape, so he was hunting goat, mountain goat. And what happened, he went out with a guide that they had, and he shot a goat, but the goat didn't I instantly walk to the edge of the cliff and went over the cliff, maybe about 100 feet. And it was getting to the point that they had to return back to camp. So they didn't go after the goat. The goat was dead.
Yeah.
And I was phoned the next day that, hey, you know, there's a goat up on the cliff hung up. And the hunter actually had some trouble, or at least the guide, sorry, had some trouble with his knee. So I said, well, don't worry about it. I'll fly in and I'll go with the hunter and pick up, skin out the goat. Yeah. And to see if we can save some meat and, and take it down. Well, we climbed up there. And just as we got to the goat, I thought I heard some rumbling. It was reasonably close by. I heard it. Then I looked up, and here was an avalanche coming right at us. It wasn't snow, it was rock. So anyways, what happened was we had to take cover extremely quick. So we ducked in under just a little bit of a ledge right near the goat, where the goat was. And we didn't go right over us, but it went just to the side of us. Some of the rocks came right over us, but most of it went about, 10 yards away. So that was a close one.
Yeah, it was. How did you get down from there after that?
Well, it was difficulty.
Yeah.
But, I skinned out the goat. The meat was gone.
Yeah.
The goat was bloated. The meat smelled.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I got the trophy for the hunter and the skin. And we came down. It was extremely steep. But that was a close one, I figured.
Yeah.
We were lucky that where we were, we could get under a ledge just a little bit. Otherwise, would have been it.
Down with the rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Good. So, and you said you had another story too?
Oh, well, actually, yeah, a few other stories, but these are the two probably the most interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And then now I'm trying to recall if what year it was that you quit guide outfitting? Was it 88?
I sold my guiding area in 1988.
Eight. Yeah, I did hear it right then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And then do you mind saying who bought it from you?
Sure. It was actually two people from Austria, but they couldn't hold it since they were foreigners and they didn't have a Canadian citizenship. So the man who really took it over was Sean Boot, who unfortunately got killed in an airplane accident a few years only after that.
Yeah, that's right. Sean had it from the Austrians for a couple of years, do you think?
Think something like a couple of years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Was he the sole owner, do you know, Sean?
Well, he was a sole major operator, and without him, they couldn't have the area. And it wasn't really the way the whole system is set up, that they couldn't do anything unless they had a Canadian citizen, maybe even a British Columbian citizen, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But anyhow, that was Sean, and it's just too bad. He and I think two of his kids, one at least, one child for sure, was in this accident, and they both got killed.
Okay, we are continuing with life after guiding.
Yeah, well, I was sort of a little depressed that I sold the area, but The way the government's attitude on hunting and guiding was and was becoming sort of less, how would you put it, sympathetic, at least I felt so. And with the native Indians' demands, I really thought that guiding was going to be a decreasing industry. So I thought I better sell it. And then I concentrated on actually my own hunting. I and horses. And I this is when I came into team roping. And, you know, it sort of took the place in a lot of ways of the kind of life I had before.
Yeah. Yeah, really good. So, and what about fishing, Igor?
Yeah, I always fished. I loved fishing.
Yeah.
Still do.
Fish the rivers, the streams?
Yeah, well, lakes? I fish lakes and I fish rivers. Some of the best river fishing on the fly that I've ever experienced was on Babine River when the sockeye were running. And, of course, some of the lake fishing also yielded really nice fish. I also actually fished a little bit on the sea on the west coast, and that was great too. Okay. But right now, as some people might realize, fishing is sort of curtailed, and I wonder where the future is going to be of that.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so then with, you know, what's happening now, or are you absolutely interested in the, you know, anything political, or have you got any leanings?
Political in what way?
Just what, you know, interests you, if, you know.
Well, you know, as far as politics go, yes, I'm interested in what's happening, and I'm not very happy about the way that Canada is going, and of course the way international politics and especially United States politics is going. It seems that in the last 4 years, you know, United States, who is really, whether we like it or not, it is the free world leader, so to say, has gone downward in how would you put it, in stature, yeah, and what it's doing to maintain actually peace in Europe and so forth. So yeah. I am interested, but I'm an observer. I'm not a participant.
There you go. The way to keep sane.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that sounds really good. And if you have anything else that you think,
I think that pretty well sums it up, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I really appreciate, appreciate, yeah.
You're welcome.
What you're contributing. So this is Igor Stasiu and Sonia Lester signing off on March the 8th at the Old Church. Okay, thank you.
Good. Thank you.